From the land of Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the second day of June 2017. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. We'll preview the Farm Doc Daily article Daryl Good and Scott Irwin wrote yesterday and posted up to that website. We'll have a more complete set of details on Monday. But Scott's here to talk about what this Tuesday's crop condition report for corn says about the national average yield. I take it with a grain of salt, he says, but it does point to a lower number. And you can learn more about that over the weekend by looking at the Farm Doc Daily website or listening here on the Closing Market Report on Monday, or maybe better, doing both. And the rest of the time today, we'll hear parts of Commodity Week, and we'll also take a look at the weather forecast with Eric Snodgrass from Agrible.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. On this Friday afternoon, we're joined by Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Thanks for being with us today, Michael.
Great to be with you again, Todd. Happy Friday to you and all the great listeners out there.
Well, tell me a little bit about what's been happening in your area. We've had some discussions a little bit over the last, week and a half about dry conditions starting to develop, but not so much so. I'm wondering what you feel like things are in your area, and more importantly, maybe to the north of you.
I do think we have a different dynamic as we head into report week next week. A week from today will be the next supply-demand report by USDA, and I do think there is a different dynamic brewing after the longer-term 30-day models really jumped back to a much hotter bias for the Dakotas and parts of Minnesota. And this wasn't just registering on my radar, but colleagues in Chicago were talking about this morning as we saw these new model maps come out. And keep in mind, you know, South Dakota, North Dakota, Minnesota, these are the areas we're talking about, the Dakotas especially, I think you've talked about in the past, but they're looking, you know, at the last 14 days rainfall, they're looking at something like 10% of normal at this point. So when you see possibly Kearney, Nebraska, and Sioux Falls, South Dakota, and even close to New Ulm, Minnesota, breach 100 degrees on the 8-day model, and the 30-day model shows 2 to 4 degrees hotter than normal June weather, that these were just updated in the last 24, 48 hours, Todd. I think that did catch the market's attention. I think it'll be a bigger factor if it actually pans out come late next week and those temperatures are on the way and could really influence the trade mindset because of these report numbers being what we thought were going to be mainly the things that were going to drive trade. That may not be the case. And just to give a perspective, those three states I mentioned, South Dakota, North Dakota, Minnesota, they're about 18.5% of the total 90 million corn acres and about 23% of the total 89.5 million bean acres. So this is a corn and bean weather-supportive market if this does come into fruition, and it kind of takes away from playing one against the other in the spread.
Yeah, so the market could almost discount the Dakotas, but once you throw Minnesota in that, which is the number four corn-producing state in the nation, it really begins to bump things up, and you have to really start to pay attention. What happened in the marketplace this week that caught your attention, not looking into the future, but just in the trade and how things moved through the week?
Yeah, we had a lot better trading week in the beans because of the weather features, but I think also because we saw a really strong export sale week. We had 22 million bushels sold on the exports. That's about, I think, 60-some percent above the four-week average. And we saw the meal technically climb back above the $300 a ton level. So beans and corn in the new crop both closed down only about 1.75. If anything was disappointing, it was once again the wheat market. I have to lay that probably at the feet of, number one, harvest pressure. Number two, fears that the Southern Plains rains are going to really hit the quality of the wheat as we get ready to harvest in those areas. With, I think Texas is only at about 27% harvested based upon the U.S. Wheat Associates report today, and Oklahoma is only 16% harvested at this point on hard red wheat. So rains right now would just be terrible for the quality of the crop is what the market's thinking. But I think third and probably one of the biggest features that hit the market in the grains because it hit the crude oil so badly was this change in our climate policy. And I'm not pro or against the climate policy. I simply don't know enough about it. But I will say that there was a Mississippi River Mayors Association that came out and said this carbon price taxes that are going to be imposed on U.S. agricultural goods are going to really hurt U.S. agricultural exports, and we're not going to have any say about it. I do think that did overhang the commodity markets in general. I wonder what the trade would have been like today had we not had that. I would have liked to have seen that.
Yeah, you couple that with the idea that the administration, when it looks towards infrastructure, is thinking about tolls for updated locks and dam systems on the upper Mississippi and Illinois rivers. I suppose there will be some pressure on the marketplace based on not being as competitive in the world market in the future. But those are sometimes some pretty distant future sorts of things to have to deal with.
You're right. I mean, and that's unfortunate that the market nowadays prices that stuff in automatically. And so that one good thing about this week was the dollar did go back down to and almost take out the lows from the post-election. And so in that respect, that helped us a lot. And we see the stock market making all-time highs again in a pro-growth mindset. And one of these days, those two things are going to have to come together. Either we're going to have better trade and more globalized trade and the stock market's prices are valid, or we're going to have to see some asset reallocation because we're getting into some pretty thin air, if you ask me.
Anything on the livestock side of the marketplace? They've been pretty active the last couple of days.
Yeah, we fed the bull and the cattle. We saw not only this heat supposedly coming into the Dakotas and feedlot territory, but we more importantly saw some mid-130s trade and in light trade in the plains. We here in Kansas, west of me, were in the low 130s, but still that was until yesterday and today's rally was about $7 higher than the front-end futures. So I think between the box beef prices and the cash prices that were sold midweek, we really did feed the bull and the cattle. Be watching the hogs. We're up against a real, real tough weekly resistance level. So be watching the technicals and the hogs.
All right. Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate you being with us. Any final word before I let you go for the day?
I'd say the only thing about the report next week, Todd, is to keep an eye on that demand, because even though the weekly export sales were a little bit disappointing for the corn this week, export inspections were very good, and we're still running almost 50% ahead of last year at this time and year-to-date inspections. So I think USDA still got some catching up to do.
Hey, thanks so much.
My pleasure, sir. Have a great weekend.
You too. That, of course, is Mike Zuzlo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at agrigold.com.
Well, if you listen regularly, you know that we record Commodity Week on Thursday afternoon. In a moment, we'll get to that program, and you'll hear all of it today. It was really interesting. We talk about a really low yield, and we talk about really low corn prices, too. So a lot of fun in the program. But let's start with something a little different that was posted yesterday on the Farm Doc Daily website, but related to the discussions we had during Commodity Week. Daryl Good and Scott Irwin have been taking a look over the last couple of weeks at the weekly crop progress reports released by USDA on Monday afternoon. It was Tuesday this week, but normally on Monday afternoon. And trying to tease out what that really means for the end of the year. Now, I talked to Scott just a little bit earlier today about this, and you'll hear all of that or most of that conversation on Monday during the closing market report. However, in the Farm Doc Daily article and in our conversation, we discussed what this year's first national crop condition rating for corn might mean in the way of yield, because you can coordinate the two. It doesn't work very well until we get to July, frankly, but the first one and the last one do have a normal drop from one to the next that actually correlates to yield, and I asked Scott what a thumbnail sketch of that might look like.
And then you plug that into the relationship that we presented in the article, you end up at 164.3 based on that set of calculations. So it's an intriguing and a pretty low number. Clearly, that's not where the market's at, and this is just one model and one exercise. But certainly something to keep your eye on.
That's Scott Irwin. I spoke with him earlier. He's an agricultural economist here on the University of Illinois campus. He and Daryl Good, as I mentioned, have been taking a look at the weekly crop progress reports, in particular the crop condition numbers, and trying to figure out just exactly how they correlate to yield at the end of the season. Beginning of the year to the end of the year, generally speaking for corn, there is a drop in the condition rating, and this year started at a really low level, by the way. Consequently, Daryl and Scott just did the numbers and came up with that 164 bushel average national yield, although that's just a number and you need to take it with a grain of salt. Given that, during commodity week, we came to a conclusion that was a little bit the same. And in the same process, we also talked about LDPs for corn. It's a great program coming up right now. Our panelists this week on Commodity Week include Greg Ginder. He's at FC Stone out of Chesterfield, Missouri. Elaine Cubb from Mastering the Grain Markets from Elkhorn, Nebraska. Bill Mayer from Strategic Farm Marketing out of Champaign. And Dan Zwicker at Zwicker Consulting from Waco, Texas. As usual, we start with the normal question, which is what's on the list of things to talk about? It first went to Bill Mayer.
Well, I guess the question I get asked the most, I'll go ahead and forward to the group here. What will it take to get the corn market out of this rut that we're in, and what kind of carryout number do we have to get down to get the December corn to make some break the recent highs here?
Dan Zwicker.
What impact, if any impact, the spring has had on maybe total acreage?
Greg Ginder.
Well, I think one of the interesting things over the next couple of months is going to be the effect on cash basis for corn and beans going forward when this crop all comes to market, what's left to market. So that'll be interesting.
Elaine Cubb?
I think weather, this is the time of year to talk about weather. In the ways that it has affected acreage, as Dan talked about. But also, you know, there's drought going on out here in the western parts of the Corn Belt, so that is something to keep an eye on and maybe worth talking about.
Well, I do think that is the case, Elaine. We've been discussing this a bit during the closing market report with the meteorologist over the last couple of weeks, especially parts of the Dakotas. Have you traveled in those areas?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's just sort of a general sense of panic because this is the wrong time of year to be getting this kind of drought. If you had, you know, D0 or D1 drought in July or August, you know, that doesn't inspire the same amount of panic as it does when you really need that moisture to get a crop started, and particularly the pastures. And yes, all over Memorial Day, I did travel kind of across both Dakotas, and the pastures are really grim looking. And like I said, there's just sort of this general sense of panic. And, you know, the cornfields and the soybean fields, things have emerged. Obviously, planting pace was not affected. When you plant in dust, bins will bust, they say, but that depends on some rain eventually happening, so we hope that rain happens. But I will say in the markets, you know, maybe we're not seeing any real sure concern about that in the corn market, and certainly not in the soybean market, and maybe that's justified, especially when you look at the drought monitor. The parts of the Dakotas where this is affecting is not really the big corn growing areas, like southeast South Dakota, for instance, which is, you know, effectively little Iowa as far as corn growing potential. That's still okay. But where I'm talking about, or where I'm looking, or where I drove this over this past weekend, is spring wheat country. And you absolutely do see that on the futures charts. We are seeing an upward trend in spring wheat. This September contract, 582, I'm looking at. So that's kind of the one bright spot where we're actually seeing some sort of a weather response in the grain markets. And I don't know to what extent it would ever carry over into corn and soybeans.
Well, let's continue our travels. I know, Dan, you came up from Texas to the Quad Cities area in Illinois. Did you happen to go through St. Louis in the Litchfield area or a different direction? And in either case, what did you see?
No, not that I come up here to the Quad Cities. I go up through the Lake of the Ozarks. So I do get a little taste of what went on in northeast Missouri. I get to look at that crop. And then I cross the river at Hannibal and then start heading up through western Illinois and here on into the Quad Cities. So I do miss central Illinois. Now, when I was living in Bloomington and did the Texas trip, we did go through Litchfield all the time. So, but what I saw is like we kind of talked about on this afternoon's comments is the crop is extremely small for this time of year. And of course, I guess, you know, the thing that you remember is the last two or three crops. In the last two, three crops, things were much more mature at this time of year. Yes, our planting numbers are pretty well on par with average, except for maybe some extreme cases in parts in the eastern Corn Belt. But you can really see that this crop needs some growing degree days to get it to grow. It's been fairly cool up here where I'm at. I do think it's going to warm up a little bit, but I don't see any major heat, at least in the forecast, at least for right now. And I think this is what this crop probably needs the most. But the stands look good. Everything population is going to be good in this particular area. I don't think we were probably as wet as we were maybe in central Illinois and parts of Indiana and Ohio.
And of course, is Dan Zwicker at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. He, Bill Mayer, Elaine Cubb, and Greg Ginder all joined us for Commodity Week, recorded yesterday afternoon. You'll hear the rest of that program if you can stay with us on our home radio station. The rest of you can pick up the whole program online at WILLAG.org, or you can go back and listen to it anytime you'd like. And it will air on most of these radio stations over the weekend. Commodity Week, it's our look at what's been happening in the world of agriculture. Again, we'll pick up that conversation on our home radio station in a few minutes. But right now, let's turn our attention to the weather forecast. Eric Snodgrass is here. He's from Agrible. Eric, thanks for being with us. Tell me a little bit about the weather as you see it.
Well, Todd, one thing that I'm watching right now is the latest U.S. Drought Monitor update map. You see, when this one came out on Thursday, we saw that the Dakotas, which we've been talking about now for several days, are really starting to get dry. Looking over the last 30 days, I'm seeing that they've got about 50% of average precipitation when you kind of look at both states as a whole. And the thing is that today they're getting really hot again, way up into the 90s. And the point behind me telling you this is that with all of that heat and not much moisture in the soil, a lot of that heat will go into really evaporating what's left and keeping temperatures up and soil moisture down. Now, we do have some weekend rain to be talking about here, and it might possibly move through parts of the Dakotas, but these storms can be pretty widely scattered and nothing like the widespread stuff that they really need to soak those soils again after they got their planting done.
We'll hear more from Eric Snodgrass in just a bit in Commodity Week if you can stay with us on the home station right here at willag.org. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Each Friday, we take a look at the agricultural weather forecast with Eric Snodgrass from Agrible. Hey, Eric, thanks for being with us. What do you see in the weather this week?
Well, Todd, one thing that I'm watching right now is the latest U.S. Drought Monitor update map. You see, when this one came out on Thursday, we saw that the Dakotas, which we've been talking about now for several days, are really starting to get dry. Looking over the last 30 days, I'm seeing that they've got about 50% of average precipitation when you kind of look at both states as a whole. And the thing is that today they're getting really hot again, way up into the 90s. And the point behind me telling you this is that with all of that heat and not much moisture in the soil, a lot of that heat will go into really evaporating what's left and keeping temperatures up and soil moisture down. Now, we do have some weekend rain to be talking about here, and it might possibly move through parts of the Dakotas, but these storms can be pretty widely scattered and nothing like the widespread stuff that they really need to soak those soils again after they got their planting done. But since we're talking about storms, let's talk about what I'll call round one for near Illinois later on tonight. So basically, we had some widely scattered storms that could possibly push through Illinois and parts of Wisconsin. Most locations will get missed, but we could see some pretty heavy downpours in some locations. Now, Wisconsin gets round two on Saturday. And during this whole weekend, the southern plains are really getting hit with some pretty widely scattered showers and storms. And we'll talk more about the southern plains in just a few moments. But we really need to focus in on is kind of the overall evolution of the June weather patterns with respect to what the jet stream is going to do. Now, here's the short term. We got a ridge that's building over the central plains and the western corn belt. We have this pesky trough out east. Now, the good thing is that ridge is going to try to spread toward the east over the weekend. And we want that. We want to build in some heat. That's why we're going to see temperatures around here over the weekend trying to push into the middle to upper 80s. But that trough tries to reestablish itself by the middle of next week. And that's going to try to keep our temperatures out of the 80s, which is where they should be this time of year, back into the upper 70s for a couple of days. Now, that's not cold, but it's not the heat that we want so that we can really start accumulating those growing degree units fast and get the corn tall and the new soybean crop out of the ground and doing well as well. But when we look kind of at the overall flow of this, we are starting to see that that ridge out in the west may have the chance by June 9th through the 14th to start to spread across the Corn Belt in the Midwest. So we're not seeing the continuation of the, you know, just lots and lots of cooler than average weather for too long. But on the whole, the ridge is going to try to stay in the Great Plains for most of the first half of this month, with occasionally spreading on off to the east, giving us a little bit of extra warmth. Now, I told you I wanted to talk about what was going on in the southern states, southern Corn Belt, and the southeast, so let's get back there real quick because this is important for ag. You see, June 1st was the start of the Northern Hemisphere Atlantic hurricane season, and as a result, we need to start watching the tropics very, very closely. Now, on the whole, what we've got going on for the rest of the summer is the better than the not chance that we're going to see warmer sea surface temperatures creeping into the Gulf of Mexico and along the East Coast. Now, what that's got me concerned about is what I call homebrew tropical systems. These are systems that when they may be weak, but when they get close to the United States, they can use that warmer water to really intensify as they make landfall. And we're kind of seeing something like that right now. And this is what I'm talking about. There is a tropical depression that is sitting basically right on the kind of the southwestern coast of Mexico, Tropical Depression 2. Now, this is in the eastern Pacific, but it is forecast to be kind of steered across the Mexico there and then into the Gulf of Mexico early next week. And what that does is that just brings a big surge of moisture that can be used to make quite a bit of showers and storms across the southern states. So we're looking at a pretty wet week from Texas all the way to the Carolinas simply due to this surge of warmer air and also moisture. Now, what all that means is that we're going to be dumping quite a bit of rain there. It's coming from a tropical source. And so, you know, we always have to start watching for fungal pressures and how they move to the north with time. And so this is just another thing we have to keep an eye on. So with the start of hurricane season, I think a lot of our Friday updates are going to include a talk about what's going on in the tropics. Because don't forget, those storm systems can move all the way into Illinois, can get as far north as it to Canada sometimes with their moisture. So we can't ignore the tropics now that it's June.
Indeed. Thanks so much, Eric. Eric Snodgrass is with Agrible.